Recording excerpted.
We're back in open session, and there's nothing to report out of the closed session discussion. Item 7, consider and take possible action regarding repairs and upgrades to Willow's office building as recommended by Tim Westman. When last the board was involved in this, we had approved going forward with the exterior renovation or repairs with an estimated cost of about $850,000. So that was about a year and a half ago now. We've gotten a little bit more information. I guess we've gotten some bids from potential contractors, and the price is in excess of the $850 now. So you can fill us in on where we are, what kind of happened with regards to pricing, and what options we might have here with regards to this project.
Okay. So, Brian, as you said, the initial project was budgeted at about $850,000. That was with the idea of taking the T111 siding off and replacing it with stucco and replacing the windows. After meeting with the board, the project was approved with the caveat that we bring on an exterior facade specialist that specializes in waterproofing. And I think another question was posed was, is the building worth it? You know, can we substantiate such a project? And we contracted with Ferrari and Moe, and they did a building report, which I think Gail supplied to you, that basically substantiated our findings that, yes, the T111 siding has lived its useful life, and that it makes total sense that the windows be replaced with dual pane low energy windows as well. And in contracting with them, of course, in keeping with their professional integrity, they did create a bid specification package that was conducive to a Class A high-rise building, and spec'd certain product types and window brands. And in keeping with their specifications, that is what we gave to the four qualified bidders that we chose to bid. And given that information, the numbers all came in, you know, in varying degrees, but well above the proposed budget that that we proposed to the board. So I do have Jay Martinovich and Chris Krieg with BSM, whose proposal I also believe that you have, that might be able to speak to the detail, to maybe the product and the process of installation and what Ferrari and Moe have proposed. But it was really a much larger scope than what we came to the table with initially. But do feel strongly in speaking with all of the contractors and Ferrari and Moe that the numbers are real. So if there are any more detailed questions, or if there's any more detailed information that we can give to that, to those numbers, then I'm going to kind of defer to the experts. But also, with that being said, upon approval of the project in 2013, effective January 1, 2014, we did start amortizing the cost of this project over 20 years at 3.5% back to the tenants. So the tenants have already started reimbursing landlord for the cost of the project. Almost $39,000 in 2014, and the budgeted reimbursement in 15 for the project is $58,000. Just so if that eases anybody's mind, that, you know, it is being amortized back over to the tenants as well. So
is it the $850 that's being amortized?
That's correct. So, you know, we would have to go back and make adjustments. So I guess we are seeking board approval to move forward with the proposed base bid of the $1,313,000 due to the unknown factors, the amount of dry rot repair that is completely unknown but estimated, which was provided unit pricing per Ferrari and Moe's bid specifications. Not wanting to have to come back to the board for more money. I mean, the overall project will come in higher than the 1.3 base bid based on the actual dry rot repairs that will need to be repaired. So So, and that won't be known until we pull all of the siding off.
So do you have any idea what the range of that could be? The low, the high?
It's an unknown situation. I mean, I can't see behind. What we can see is there's, I'd say, a fair amount, but behind, I would say the north side of the building would have more dry rot due to the position of the building than it does to the south side of the building. There's been some early indication that there is some dry rot, but it did not appear to be that it's substantial. Substantial meaning having to replace, you know, all the plywood, shear paneling in the building. It appears to be around the perimeters of the windows that are leaking and appear to be leaking. To what extent and quantities, I couldn't tell you that answer.
The way this building designed, is it a steel frame building?
No, it's a wood frame building.
So we're not looking at just the plywood, we're also looking at part of the
structural
structure as well.
Yeah, so you're talking about the trimmers, king studs, possible head, sill plate, those type areas, the intrusion points.
And so your bid doesn't include any of that dry rot work at all?
No, we would, all contractors that, you know, I don't know any other contractors, were given a breakdown sheet to give unit pricing for the potential repairs. That is in our proposal of, you know, so much a square foot for trim replacement, siding, not siding, but plywood, shear, and so forth. So their unit cost in advance so you get an idea. Is it 5%, 10%?
Well, because I'm looking at the breakdown here, and I see dry rot repair is number 2 in the price breakdown, and you do have numbers placed in here, so I'm kind of confused now.
I can take that one,
bid process.
Our base bid doesn't have that number in it. However, we did allocate costs based on unit costs or units that were given to us from the architect.
Mm-hmm.
So it is in our bid, but it's not in our base bid. It's additional cost to our base bid.
I'm not sure. So is your base bid $1.3 million?
Our base bid is $1.3, yes.
So this price breakdown that I'm looking at that supposedly should add up, where it says at the bottom total base bid sum to $1.3 million, you're telling me that because, I mean, it would appear, based on the way this is filled out, that there is at least some square footage of certain replacement and drywall items included in this $1.3 million.
If I can answer that. So this format was put together by the architect, but it really doesn't hold true to a real format of estimating. So what we did was, I'm not sure if any other contractors did it, we provided an itemized breakdown bid of the entire category of the project, from general conditions, supervision, sheet metal, windows, painting, stucco, itemized, and that's what the 1.3 represents. Okay, this format that he provided, where he tried to include all these additional numbers, we filled in his blanks with his numbers. So example would be 2A, dry rot repair. He's asking, what would it cost if we replaced 21,000 feet of shear panel? Mm-hmm. And so that's what that number represents. Because the original spec said, we want you to replace the entire building. And as contractors and Value Winter were like, how do you know what that is? Why,
sure,
why would someone do that? And so we gave the unit cost in the event that that had to take place. So you don't necessarily add these unit costs up to come up with a gross number. That is just an idea of each one of these areas of potential that what may happen. In addition to that, if item, I'm just going to say it out loud without looking at it, if item H was to be used, then maybe item K or something would not be associated with it, because if you're replacing a king set or a trim, then you wouldn't be doing this, or vice versa. So these are purely unit costs in the event you run into this type of issue.
So is the $240,000 of general conditions included in your $1.3 million?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so that's in. But you're saying everything in 2, dry rot, is not in?
That's correct.
Okay, so potentially that's another $250,000 or so. If it held true that the architect somewhat accurately estimated these square footages that would need repair based on what they saw, if that holds true, then there's about $240,000 of adds to this 1.3
million. Well, I think you're being misconceived here with the $165,000 on the entire building being replaced. So if you took that out completely and you start working with the lesser numbers of itemized details.
So the 21,000 is the whole building.
Imagine where the siding is right now, that if after you pull the siding off the paper, that you're going to then turn and take the entire plywood sheathing off the building and replace it brand new. Not necessary at all.
Okay.
And so that's what that high number represents. So now you're looking at unit pricing of, you know.
But then that drove, that got down to the drill down to the number of what it would be per square foot price is what was requested.
Okay. So I noticed a couple of other things. You've got landscaping and regrading not in the contract. So
correct.
We're going to have an ad for that too.
That will be an operating expense, which is part of the building budget and passed back through the tenants.
So the
as
replacement,
landscape repairs.
I mean,
it's not replacement. It's what happened is a lot of the bark mulch has kind of come up to the building, and it needs to be pulled back. Mm-hmm. And I've already talked to our landscaper, and he said, by all means, you know, we'll pull it back the 4 feet that it needs to be pulled back, and probably just disperse it among the other areas of landscape. So that would be R&M.
But when the contractor comes in and tears probably the whole skin off and more of the building and starts replacing windows, will there be scaffolding lifts? Do you not anticipate that there will be some landscaping damage to what's around this building from that?
We do absolutely anticipate some of that. And again, I've spoken to the landscaper, and prior to just getting underway, we're going to do some additional tree trimming. Any trees that are close to the building, we'll trim them back to a healthy, safe distance. And again, that any of those landscaping costs will be part of the building budget R&M.
But it'll be more. I mean, it'll be an add to the $1.3 million in the end, right? It's going to be more.
But it's already in the budget.
It's already in the budget. Yeah, not going to be any higher than last year.
Okay. Yeah. So then you also have item 4, sliding and trim replacement, that is not in the contract. I thought the whole purpose of this contract was to do sliding and trim replacement. Or what are we doing?
We're replacing the T111 siding with stucco, and the existing stucco remains.
Did something happen from the last meetings I was in where we talked about doing T111 siding, not stucco, to where we are now? Now we're doing stucco again?
I don't think we ever discussion with replacing the T111, which is a wooden material, right? Discussion between stucco and a composite.
Oh, a cement board.
The cement board. Right.
And
we had a meeting.
The discussion that the cement board was significantly cheaper than the stucco, but now I've heard through the grapevine that stucco is significantly cheaper than the cement.
It is. And all of the contractors
The opposite. They do the cementitious cement board with the trim and the caulking and the painting. On a large scale, is substantially more, at least 25 to 50% more than a stucco application. And that was discussed during the job walk with all four contractors that sat out there, and we, you know, as a collaborative group, competitively bidding, all agreed to that.
Okay, because that's completely different than where I left off with the meetings we had with the architect, who was saying that the stucco was actually more than doing the hardy plank siding.
No, and if meetings that we were in, that I spoke up at that point, and I said, we've already looked at the two pricings, and this was with Nadia, with Ferrari Mo, that the pricing did not come in as she said, that the stucco came in cheaper. I don't recall exactly what it was. It was 20-25% cheaper to do it on the scale that we're doing it. And that's kind of where we left it. She insisted that it was less. I knew and spoke what I knew to be true, and that's kind of where we left it. So that's why we forged forward with the stucco, dollar amount, and that's how we came up with this. However, we followed their instruction with the waterproofing piece to, you know, keep their integrity, their professional integrity as far as their request recommendations to the waterproofing of the building. So that's kind of where we're at. So
stucco's cheaper than hardy plank.
Yes.
That is correct.
And when I came on board, I had heard conflicting information on that as well. So I provided the suggestion of having, okay, let's add a separate line item into the bid and let's see what the contractors come back with, you know, and that, you know, solve that.
So the bid form, then your $1.3 million includes you doing stucco on the whole building where there is currently wood siding. It will all be replaced with stucco. And if you were to do hardy plank, because the way this was designed, I believe, was that you were the original bid was supposed to be with what we thought was the cheaper hardy plank, with then an alternate, which occurs in alternate 2 and 3, that would be an add for doing stucco instead. And you've got item 2, alternate 2, is a $66,000 add. So what is that add for?
So in the in regards to stucco, cosmetic reasons and purposes, when you are integrating a new existing stucco line to a new stucco line, you've got two different these materials, joints that are coming together with an overlap, and that finished look will be compromised from a aesthetic look when you're coating a spray or something over. You'll have more density to the other location. So you might see that separation line between the new and the old. So that additional is to be able to float into a given area so you have a clean break line. In other words, it'd be an inside corner of a building. So instead of just stopping it in the center of the wall, if you've ever done painting or any other repair work, you'll recognize that repair in the center of the wall. So that is to cosmetically extend it to a given finish point.
Okay,
cosmetic.
So the $66,000 add is to make it look better.
Well, we actually have, with that being said, and this is where we can get into really details, is you have this edge band detail that goes around the building right now, you know, with a chamfer edge. We can use that specific detail line to make that break point, and you wouldn't have to worry about that. There are some details in the specs that say they want you to go a certain footage away from every window, and if you follow that exactly, then you would be compromising over that line. Mm-hmm. So if we could bring it back to the line, which our intent is, then you don't have to worry about it. So again, when you're reading an architect's spec saying, I want you to do this, and you look at something different, it may not make sense to do it that way and do something different, and that's what this basically represents.
The waterproofing detail says that from the edge of the window has to be broken back
2 feet.
2 feet. So if you measure 2 feet, it goes into the middle of that open area so that we're going to have that line. My request was, let's go, and this was to all contractors, go edge to edge. This way we don't have that defining line. Mm-hmm. It complplies with the request of the architect. It just adds a little bit more. I'm sorry. It adds a little bit more. I'm not Italian.
Okay, so I'm really confused.
Cosmetic reasons.
Okay, so now I'm really confused. So when you bid it $1.3 million, that was using the spec of the architect, of what they told you to do, and then the added $66,000 is what you just said?
What I asked them to do. That is correct, to make it look...
Okay. So it makes it look better. I think that's
makes
what
it look
said.
Better. Yes, yeah. Ma'am.
I mean, if you've ever done a patch job on a patch job, mm-hmm. you know, based on, and everyone agrees, if anyone in the industry that's done stucco work, you'll recognize where that overlay is on top of another location. And when you paint the building, it may make it stand out more. So it's just a cosmetic look, nothing structural, nothing, you know, it's just giving a more smoother finish.
Okay, so you've also excluded the insulation, so there will not be any new insulation to the building?
So existing, as you said, because his theory was to remove all the plywood sheathing, therefore then you can insulate. Right now the insulation is all covered with sheathing, so you can't access it. So what remains as is. If we remove some plywood sheathing, we could replace some insulation in there, but there currently is insulation now.
So that'll be an add too.
If you guys want that done.
That's between the sheetrock and the exterior wall. That's what's in the wall cavity.
Well, let's face it, anywhere you've got dry rot, you're going to have to put new insulation in, right? I mean, if you've got dry rot, you've got to pull everything out, fix the dry rot. You've got to put new insulation in.
It would be nice, theoretically. Not. It depends. You don't know.
I don't think we want our building without insulation.
Well, I think they're talking about leaving replacing the existing insulation if it's not damaged.
Oh, so you can remove it and put it back in?
Yeah, it's glass.
Yeah.
Okay. It's glass plate. Yeah, and I should point out something else that you asked regarding the dry rot repairs and how to interpret what's going on with the drywall repairs. And Jay was alluding to this, and I'm going to expand on it just a little bit. When you look at these dry rot repairs, not all measures will be needed. For instance, line 2, they talk about header replacement. And if you replace a header, then we won't need isolated repairs on that header, which would be line C. And the reciprocal holds true also. If we are asked to do, if we open it up and we see that there's some header repairs where we have to scrape it out and treat it, then we won't have to replace that header.
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, they did this, they put this bid spec together with just, okay, what if there are 62 headers out of 188 windows that need replacement, okay? Yeah, it's a guess, but at least we have something to go by, and if there's only 40 of them, then we take 22 times 205 off of the contract in a deductive change order. Okay, that's the way this was designed. It makes it easy for administration, and it also keeps the change order costs moving in a consistent way. But I understand what you've done. Then another question I had, I see also electrical and plumbing repairs associated with dry rot are excluded. It's an unknown. Yeah, you would theoretically have an add for that. Under fees and general rates, you did not give us any labor rates or any overhead profit percentages. Why?
I believe all parties were asked not to fill out the labor rates. So we could provide you overhead and profit.
Yeah, labor rates for their subcontractors and
no, for change order work.
Well, they're using unit pricing.
Unit pricing
so
for
the
that.
Unit pricing has the labor rate that's already associated inside of it.
But what about things that are not included in these things?
We have our OH&P identified in our base bid at 8%.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I just I'm very familiar with this type of work and the reason why this price breakdown was done this way. Believe it or not, it is a standard in the exterior repair industry to do it this way because there are so many unknowns, and you're asked as a contractor to bid it with a breakdown of what your price is, including certain amounts of the unknown repairs at a known rate. And then as you go through and you do those repairs, at some point in the middle, maybe parts of the way through the job, there's a reconciliation of, well, I've done all the windows and I only had to do 20 headers, so we deduct this amount off of the project cost. But you were asked in your bid form to assume that, yeah, so they assumed that, you know, they asked you to assume that all of the stucco would be removed. Is that a valid assumption? I don't know, but that's how they asked you to bid the job, and it kind of seems like you did something different. Did the other contractors do it this way too?
Yeah. No, they all four contractors bid very similarly. And
there was a wide disparity in price, right?
Yep, there was. Mm-hmm. One didn't seem to do a very complete job at all.
Lack of detail.
Lack of detail. And then the high one, you know, was very, very high. So,
but maybe he included replacing all of the 21,000 square feet?
No.
I did a bid analysis and broke it down, and it was very, very similar. But I guess basically, and I can totally appreciate that, you know, this building is an investment and we need to kind of really nail down what this overall project is going to cost. And, you know, we can continue to drive down into the numbers, but again, with two contractors being much higher and then one kind of giving us a very incomplete bid, I believe these numbers are very real. And if we need to kind of come to some sort of bottom line, then, you know, we can really try and do that. But again, there are a lot of unknowns. I don't know if there's a consideration out there on the table for not doing this project at all. And if that is even a consideration, I would like to address some of the issues that face us right now. Is that we pulled a permit on this project prior to the July 1, 2014 deadline for where Title 24 and ADA code requirements basically went through the roof. And they're driving every project, including tenant improvements, up by at least 30%. So that permit is going to expire 180 days from when we pulled it, which was late June. If we get underway, we can apply for an extension of the permit. If this were project be delayed a couple of years to see maybe where the investment stands, labor, materials, and the repair work are just going to increase exponentially. So,
can you extend the permit without commencing work?
That's a good question.
Yes. Traditionally, a city will give you at least one or two once it gets beyond a reasonable period.
Okay, so and we haven't asked for any extensions to date, right?
No, we have not yet.
Okay.
You're current as of today.
Yeah, the permit will expire. I want to say it was like June 24th or 26th that we pulled it. But and with all that being said, in addition to the dollar and cents and the technicalities of the actual construction work, a huge portion, and in my opinion, almost a larger portion of this project is the coordination and the planning. We are going to be very disruptive to the tenants. We are going to have meetings with them. We're going to have 2-week look-aheads. I'm going to have to meet with the Mullins and the what you know, and say, listen, do you have any depositions? Do you have any things? Because we're going to be ripping your windows out next Thursday at noon. You know, and doing that, in addition to the weather, we may or may not ever get rain again, but it's probably going to take us a couple, 2-3 months to plan and coordinate, get supplies ordered, and then to really get work underway by springtime so that we are buttoning up this building and we are done by October. So I do feel, and I don't have that date in front of me, but I feel that there is a drop-dead date. And if we don't get started this year, it's going to be another year. And you know, we feel passionate about this investment and feel that this would be an amazing improvement to it. It would benefit the tenants, the energy efficiency of the building, the curb appeal. So just with all that being said, if not doing it at all as a consideration, I would hope that you would take those things into factor as well.
Jerry, how many more questions do you have?
I have a couple more, but if you want to take
a breath. there's a sample analysis done. Tell me a little bit about the asbestos and what form is it in? Is it friable? Is it non-friable? Will it become friable during the project? Is that a consideration for tenants?
It's a small amount. It's only the lower band around the perimeter of the building.
Okay.
That lower 4-foot section is the only area that is ACM material.
And I believe in your packet I had requested a I can't remember the name of the company. Is it RGA?
Yes.
RGA to do an analysis of the material and then how it's to be handled. So right. That is going to be...
What kind of tenant impact could that conceivably have? Would they have to evacuate a suite
negative.
Or something?
No, it will be done from the exterior. It'll be done...
As long as it's not disturbed.
Yeah, as long as it's not broken up. But anyway, they will be using the material on the outside, the polypropylene type of plastic.
It'll follow all OSHA guidelines. Right. This is done by an independent contractor. That's all they do.
In terms of shaking up tenants,
yeah.
Seeing people in moon suits outside of your window, and you're inside.
And we're planning on doing that
could be a
off hours.
Right.
So that those kind of things... won't be seen.
And we don't even think it's everywhere.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I think it's been, it was...
It has been present.
It's not everywhere, but it's enough.
Motif.
We could call them back. In answer to your question, per Ferrari, most reported is non-friable.
Non-friable. And hopefully wouldn't be in the process of demoing it either.
It'll be encapsulated as we demo it.
Okay.
Could I add, is there any kind of mold issues?
No.
It would be like a health hazard, anything like that.
If we don't make these repairs, we're going to have health hazards.
For what we, and I believe in your packet there also, or the original report, it had pictures and et cetera. It, when we had opened up the walls, it showed no signs of any present at that time.
Right.
What there is in other areas, I can't speak to that.
BSM Construction, is it a corporation?
Mm-hmm.
And who's the owner of that? Would that be you two?
That'd be Sam Martinovich. I'll give you just a brief summary of who BSM is. Founded in 1979, so we're currently in our 36th year of business. We employ over 300 employees. We run 5 different divisions within the company. We have a janitorial service, facilities maintenance, electrical, landscaping, and construction. Chris and I operate the construction division independently, the other divisions that have supervisors and managers of the 300 staff. And we have approximately 50 employees in our construction division. The owner, real owner of our company, Sam, started Skyline Construction many years ago and developed that into a $750 million business and then sold it. And subsequently brought construction back into the BSM operation, which has been around now going in its 35th year.
Okay, because I did a quick search on BSM Construction. I couldn't find a corporate name. Is there some other
building
name?
So we have the umbrella, umbrella. So BSM Construction falls under building service maintenance.
Okay. But you have a separate website that's called BSM Construction, but you don't have a license in that name, right? The license is in building maintenance?
Again, most licensed, a lot of companies might be a fictitious name, so it could have a corporate name. Instead of being under my name, Jay, it's under
sure.
BSM. So most companies are that way. So you can find that we can provide that for you as necessary.
Well, I did do the research, and I was a little puzzled that you have a BSM Construction website that doesn't reference building services maintenance as sort of a separate entity, but it has no license on its own. The license is held by building services maintenance, which is a different website. There's actually kind of a violation you might want to check into. It's a violation of the contracting code to have a website for a company name and not have a license on it. Being in the construction world for a long time, these are really minor details, and I'm sure you are somehow using the other license. Maybe that's fine. I don't know. I haven't checked into that. But these are details that are important in the construction world because construction details are important. So just want to throw that out there. I have some questions for Meredith on the bid process. So you said you had 4 bidders?
Correct.
That submitted bids. So was there a bid deadline? Everybody had to have it in on a certain date?
Yes. I had to extend it once due to the holidays and a lot of them having issues with their subcontractors just not being around. But yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And those bids went to you? You opened
them? Yes, to David
to
and I.
Both the two of you. Her and I.
Okay. And so when we were having meetings before, where I sort of stepped back from this process, we had some conversation about qualifying contractors in terms of their experience with exterior renovation projects. So did you do that process?
I did that and provided all the information to Gail as requested.
Okay, so, but you didn't take the low bidder. You said you had I think somebody told me that there was a $1.2 million bid.
There was. That was the very incomplete bid, and in addition to all of the unit pricing the other bidders provided, they just categorically said that all of that was going to be supplied to us as change orders, and that was as far as they took it. So,
if I could interrupt, I was that other bidder, and I followed the protocol that was described to us from the job walk. And, I'm not sure why I wasn't considered or why I wasn't qualified on the bid process. No one ever called me to ask me questions about the bid I submitted, but I just followed the directions that was handed down to us. I was $1.2 million.
Yeah,
and my Hardy number was 1.1. In case you're curious,
can you go to the podium and at least state your name so we have it for the record, please?
Sure. I don't mean to throw anybody under the bus. My name is Carlo. I'm from AC Enterprises. I was one of the general contractors that bid the project. We were one of the qualified bidders. We're local here. We have about 134 employees working for us. This is all we specialize in, is exterior renovations. We don't do TIs like this company here. We just do exterior renovations, and we deal with occupied spaces. So we're very familiar with how to move people around while their unit's being worked on. And in this scenario here, you have people working 9 to 5. And there's going to be some work that's going to be done during that time. So we're very versed in moving people out while we work on their components and putting it back and temping everything off and making sure no dust or anything gets spread around the building.
You mentioned that your Hardy siting number was less than stucco?
Yeah, I've never heard Hardy ever being more expensive than stucco. That's I've testified before for a construction defect as a sworn witness for litigation, and I've never heard of Hardy ever being more expensive than stucco.
So did you? I can understand you're saying his bid was incomplete. I haven't. You know, I don't know what that's about, but I mean, realistically, their bid's incomplete too because they didn't put labor rates in. So,
Deborah, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Are we trying to determine the overall cost of this project, or are
yes.
you trying
and,
to?
And in doing that, I'm trying to get to.
Because I could bring any of the contractors up here, and you could ask them all the same questions, and you're going to get all the same answers. It's interesting because Lyons gave me an ad of the cement board of $370,000 over the stucco.
Over the stucco.
So, you know, and I have to say, Carlo, I really kind of don't understand what. This is very surprising to me, and I'm not sure what you're trying to achieve here. But
I think what we're trying to achieve...
Was he invited?
This is a public session, and we're just asking questions.
No, that's okay. Fine. But what I'm saying is the low bid was thrown out, the high bid was thrown out, like is very common in these processes. And then we looked at the other two bids that we were left with, and BSM's was by far the most detailed and the most complete. And... I did due diligence on these guys. I checked websites, I checked references, and I checked projects completed. So I did my job. I provided the information to Gail.
And I'm not.
The numbers that we're dealing with are very real. This is an expensive project. And if we don't do it, windows are going to start popping out of the building.
It is.
Beams are going to start falling off the side
project,
of the building.
And we just want to make sure that we get the right contractor, that we get to the right price, and that we don't end up with a $1.3 million bid, and then down the road we get to a $1.8 million bid.
Right. Well, and that's what I mean. We have a base bid, and we have unknown repairs, and so we can only assume that, you know, can we throw a number at it, a couple 300,000 more, you know, maybe, I don't know. But is there a magic number? Is there a number that this project will be thrown out the window? Is it... I mean, I feel that we've answered a lot of the technical questions, and we've done everything that we've been asked to do, including bringing Ferrari and Moe on board, taking a couple of the contractors they referred. I mean, we have done everything, and the numbers are what they are. It's an expensive project. It is.
So in the due diligence of the contractor, so we're back, and I don't really have any other questions for you, so you can sit down. Can you explain to us what your experience is with water intrusion projects that have been done as BSM construction in the last 5 years?
I'll start with that. Yeah, my experience is for 20 years previous to BSM, I spent time traveling around the country building ground-up buildings, including large residential projects, 30,000 square foot plus projects. Tilt-ups, wood frame, structural steel, throughout the bay, all over the United States. And all of those involved waterproofing components. In the last 7 years, we've done siding repairs through BSM. We've done any number of exterior projects.
Including storefront window replacements.
Yeah, including storefront window replacements.
Okay, because when I looked at your website.
It's what we do every day also.
Okay, because when I looked at your website, what I saw primarily were retail type interior renovations. That's why I asked the question. It did not appear that there were these types of projects in your experience.
Yeah.
Now, our experience, if you looked at our team and our manpower, who we are and what we are, our background experiences, I mean, Chris, myself, Don, George, Hugh, there's not one member in our management team that doesn't have at least 20 to 25 years in construction and has built. The dollar value would be beyond me. I mean, we do service very, very well-known clients. Whole Foods is, we are a prime contractor for Whole Foods. We do a large amount of work with them for many years. We work with Kimco Realty, the largest shopping center in the United States, Regency. And we are Santana Row. We do all of Santana Row's work. So we're not a fly-by-night little operation.
Understood. Can you give me just one project in the last 3 years that is similar to this building that you can explain what you did and how that project went, the things you encountered, the struggles, and how much in change orders resulted after?
A project of similar nature for me would be Stanford University. I did not do it under BSM, but personally I ran and operated because I came on to with BSM just a little over 2.5 years ago. And it's during this growth period that we've done. So during this period at Stanford, we replaced two complete dorm systems with college kids in there during this process. And it was a 9-month process, and replaced these particular dorms as well as the common area to the feeding of the kids. During that same operation, I managed to replace every exit sign during the project of every housing space at Stanford University. It was 136 units in a tone of a $3 million replace project, where I had to go and access every building with every Stanford student under secured conditions, security-wise, and manage that process from start to finish.
And that was exterior renovation, windows, siding?
Yes, it was.
Waterproofing details?
Oh, yeah. When you're removing any window, there's that procedure involved.
And so is BSM going to do its own waterproofing, or are you going to subcontract that out?
We'll be subcontracting that out.
Okay.
With our management. We will have on staff, but that particular waterproofing aspect will be done by a window expert.
And that was figured into the bid.
And that is included in the bid.
Okay. You get extra for working with college students? The damage on the interior is probably a lot worse than the damage on the exterior.
So the 1.3 is base price. Can you give us just an estimate, worst case scenario, you pull everything off and you've got to replace?
If you replace all the shear panel?
Yeah.
If you wanted to calculate the numbers of these unit costs, I mean, that's going to get you your number. If you came up with 240, if you added all those up together,
say another 240, 250,
correct,
somewhere in there.
But again, I don't think, and including this gentleman, would probably agree that the shear panel on this building, the so-called 21,300 square feet, would need to be replaced.
Okay.
And you can see that is 165,000. So the delta between that.
So worst case scenario, 1.5 million, maybe 1.55. Best case scenario, the 1.3.
The 1.3 doesn't include any of the repairs at all.
Okay.
So it's definitely going to be the 1.3.
Okay.
Best case scenario, maybe 10% of everything that's called out in here only needs to be repaired and or replaced.
Okay.
So, but the unit pricing does include complete replacement,
mm-hmm.
but if you don't have to replace it, you can repair it. So that's why you can't just times the numbers by the, because you may have to do one in one area but not in the other. And
so around 1.5, worst case.
I think that's a safe.
Is there anything else you're anticipating?
We have unit costs for all those.
All
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would be part of that worst case scenario.
They would be part of the worst case scenario.
Thank you.
So one last question. I noticed you've got a letter in here dated January 9th to Transwestern. And On the page 3 of this letter, under project specific qualifications, it states no other work other than listed above. What that would indicate to me is that you've listed out sort of your own description of the work, and you're saying this is what we're doing, and you're not really agreeing to do what's spec'd. Well, I haven't compared what's in the specs to this particular list, but normally in construction, you're signing off something, particularly when you contract, that is more along the lines of what's stated in this bid form, which says, agrees to execute a contract to furnish all labor, materials, plant, equipment, transportation, services necessary to perform and complete the construction of the project in accordance with the contract documents. So normally, you'd be signing a contract that says, I'm going to do what's in the specs and the contract documents and the plans. But what I'm seeing in this case is that you've written a letter at the end of your bid that says, no, here's a brief description of what we're doing, and this is what's included in my bid. So I don't know what the answer is, but that's going to become a conflict in the contracting process.
And I can answer part of that for you. The plans, if we put that in our proposal, and we delivered what the plans say, I don't think that the plans are the expectation of the project. There were some details that we went through and some aspects of the project that are not indicated on the plans or the specs.
Okay.
In fact, I would say there's a bit of difference.
Yeah.
Between the plans and what we actually intend to do.
Yeah, and with
and that would be all contractors.
Yeah, project like this, as I'm sure you can appreciate, Deborah, is that it is somewhat fluid. You know, it's just like the unit pricing and what exactly needs to be done. But you know, once the project was awarded, we were going to do an AIA, you know, contract. And
but I guess I'm a little concerned that we hired an architect and paid a lot of money to an architect, and then we have plans that do not reflect what we're really going to do in the project. So it sounds like maybe there's some difference between.
I'll feed on that a little bit. So we identified clearly the scope of work in the plans. There was given many options. You can do this. You have an option of this window, that window, this window, that window. You could do GSM. You could do stainless steel. You could do this. You could do that. So it wasn't. There weren't direct cutoff points and identifications to that. And then also in the field walk with all general contractors in general, when you're bidding something, you want to compare apples and apples, right? An example would be like your landscape. As we all sat there, all four as contractors said, how are we supposed to determine what's going to happen with the landscape? That could be a determining factor with the bid itself. If I put in $10,000 repair and he puts in $100,000 and the next guy puts in $60,000 and you're looking at the bottom lines, it's not really a real number. You don't know what it is. So in order to put everything on the same level playing field amongst all contractors, we kind of all theoretically came up with the same scope of work in addition to discussing the siting issue. That was a major topic of conversation during the walkthrough with all parties. And we had all agreed, I don't recall here, that this number would be substantially more. And so we all came up with that same. So we just identified in ours, we actually wrote a scope of work. So it would clarify. So if there's any questions that were asked.
Okay, so again, all the things you just listed with, you know, the spec says you can do this or you can do this, it's still in the spec. So I wouldn't expect any kind of clarification to that because it's within the spec and we would be expecting you to sign off on plans. But I would be concerned if you've got things included or you've seen something in the spec where someone else has then told you, no, you don't need to do it that way. That's kind of where my concern is are there differences like that?
No, it references items like, you'll say, like the blue skin. Mm-hmm. You know,
which you provided an ad for.
In one area, it'll say you must use blue skin, which is a Henry's product, and then they have very similar products of similar nature with a different name brand on it. So it's clarifications to things like such as that. I mean, also discussed about the drain mat system and this product and that product. So most of it was all identified as a Henry's product. So there's options that they allow you to make different choices of similar nature and be approved by. and the windows would be an example. They threw three samples of windows. It just had to meet the criteria, the thermally broken, you know, the fenestration, and those type of scenarios that you could use, you know, an all-weather, a mill guard. You know, there's a thousand windows out there.
Sure.
I don't know how everybody else feels. This is complicated. I mean, I read all of the materials provided, and there have been a lot of questions raised, and a lot of there's been a lot of dialogue about what the project entails, doesn't entail, worst case, best case, likely case. I'm just feeling like it's not in a posture for resolution today. I think we need to at least run down some of the issues and questions that have been raised. I don't want to kick this can too far, but I think that I, at least for me, I'm not feeling comfortable that I know all the answers to feel comfortable in voting today on taking an action or not taking an action. So I'd like to get the questions resolved, get a little better posture, have a better understanding of what the contract is. I don't know at what point we actually see a form of agreement, because to me, I mean, just to give you my reaction as a lawyer, having nothing to do with this project, this is a train wreck in waiting if we try to take an action and then hope that the contract reflected what was intended. I'm not throwing rocks at anybody. I'm just saying my feeling is the posture is that it's unsettled, and it's got the high likelihood of train wreck. So I'll make a motion to continue the item if need be, but I'm just expressing my concern that I'm not prepared to make a decision one way or the other today based on the posture.
So Meredith, as it stands right now, BSM has submitted a bid, and based on your due diligence and review and everything, you're recommending them. But the total details haven't been reduced to writing in the form of a contract as far as...
No, typically that's not done until the bid is officially awarded, and then we'll use an official AIA contract and create a contract. A contract hasn't been created and typically isn't until the bid is awarded.
So there wasn't the form of agreement that proposers looked at or bidders looked at?
Anybody can look up the AIA contract. It's a standard something, and everybody knew that that was the one that we will use, but you don't typically create that for all the bidders. You know, say that once the bid is awarded, then we will go into contract. This is the format that we are going to use.
So is that what our proposal said? Is
yes.
That what
the, mm-hmm.
So the spec was, we're going to use the AIA contract?
Yes. Correct. And then those details are put into the contract at the time.
Those details being?
All of the details in the bid specification and that they're agreeing to, the unit pricing that they've provided, and, you know.
All as an exhibit.
Yeah, as an exhibit.
Have you ever done remodeling or anything on your house?
I'm in the process of it now.
Welcome to the land of train wrecks. Yes, it gives whole new meaning to the expression force majeure. It's just typical. There's always something like this that's going to go on in any construction project. In fairness to anyone who makes a bid on a contract like this, there's a lot of stuff they cannot see
until
they pull off the wall.
I hear you. I mean, I built a house once. The first change order was day one.
There you go.
Day one. We didn't even get through 8 hours.
What's a great movie to watch? Tom Hanks, Money Pit. It's a terrific movie to watch. It's hysterical. So anyhow, but a serious question. You talked about a drop-dead date. I understand. We may never have another raindrop in our lifetime.
Right.
But give us an idea what your... I'm very conscious of this and concerned about what the time frame is, and if the season really would progress the way we might,
mm-hmm.
then you look at dry period from April to, say, October, November.
Right.
So what time... And I assume your bid and no other bid is evergreen. There's probably a date... of expiration.
Sure. Right, right. Especially based on, you know,
the pricing
that was obtained for labor and products,
right.
And whatnot.
So a big thing would be lead time.
What do you think our biggest lead time item is?
Windows.
Possibly windows. I mean, windows. To start getting product ordered, we're at almost the end of February now. There is meeting coordination, product order. I mean, we've got March, April. And, I mean, I got to get with these tenants. The biggest part of my job is going to be keeping them informed and not upset. And we're going to have to work around schedules. We're going to have to work around meetings and do, you know, yeah, just we are. And that I think one of the biggest unknown factors, I mean, we talk about the dry rot and whatnot, it's going to be the people factor. I think they're the most unpredictable of all of this. But, I mean, I'd say we would need to get, because I can't ask anybody to do any more work on this project without a contract.
Right.
There have been hundreds of man hours that have gone into this. It's been going on since October of 2013. So I need to get a contract awarded so that we can start this ball rolling. I don't think that there is a concrete deliverable that we can give. And we've admitted that from day one. But I think if you've got qualified people on the job who want to get the job done and get paid and do the job well, it's going to get done. And it's going to get done to the standard of the architectural engineer, to the building inspector, you know, to the window manufacturer, et cetera. So drop dead date. I mean, I would honestly say that if I'm not handing a contract to someone by the beginning of March, we're going to lose months.
Okay. That's fair.
What was the shelf life of the numbers required of bidders when they made proposals?
Typically it's 30 days. But
well, what was it?
30 days.
I don't know. I don't have the individual. Is it 60 on these?
The form is 60, but okay. Their bid actually said 30. We're going to get the 30.
But when you have good relationships with people, too.
It'll hold through this season, simple terms.
Okay. Meredith, looking at our meeting schedule, would March 11th, if approval was, if we voted on the contract, it was approved, or the bid, or to award the contract on March 11th, would that, I know that's the second week of March, and would that work?
Six to eight weeks for the windows.
I mean, you know, if that's what we have to wait for, then, you know, we can make it happen. It's going to be a scramble. Again, I my priority is, you know, specifically this building and the tenants in it. So, you know, if there's any, I'm not sure what more information we can provide in order to make a decision, but if, you know, if there's anything else.
And vote.
If that's what is going to work and what you guys are comfortable with, then what we will just make it work. But it's going to be tight.
Any other questions of anybody? Thank you very much for coming in and explaining David, Meredith, thank you as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It was nice seeing you.
I'd say it's not a good idea to have the word broken connected with window. This broken thermal thing is bizarre, but it's okay, isn't it?
Thank you.
We could probably save some money if we put in broken windows.
There you go.
But that's
there you go.
10%
saving. Pre-broken.
Right there. Yeah. Pre-broken.
Save all the labor costs of breaking them.
That's right. That's what they did at Stanford.
Okay.
So what's your concern? I mean, I like it, but what are we missing between now and then that should be accomplished based on your contract?
Well, I was just trying. I mean, there were so many questions asked, and I don't know that I fully understood the answers. It left me with a feeling like it's almost like it's strange walking into a contract where you know you're going to have a series of change orders. It's not if, it's just when and how frequent and what and
right.
And what it's going to be, or ads, or whatever the terminology is going to be. It just, I don't know, just didn't feel like it was fully nailed down.
If the goal is to have a contract that is a not-to-exceed contract in this kind of business, you will not get one.
Yeah, but let me say a couple things that might help clear this up. The bid form that was provided by Ferrarimo, again, it's a standard that is used in this type of work. And the reason that they asked them to break the bid down the way they did, which they did not do. I mean, they essentially did not follow the bid form. And I heard some feedback from this gentleman that perhaps there was confusion in instructions that were given. Okay, and they even admitted that they were giving people different, they were, you know, giving them a form and then telling them to do something different. This bid form is designed perfectly fine for this project, but what they didn't do is they didn't compare four equal bidders. What they did was they gave them confusing instructions, and four bidders all came back with, sounds like, a variety of different forms of how they viewed the form. And so you can't really compare 1.3 million to whatever the other numbers were, because they didn't include any of this work. Had they done it the way it's designed, where they said my 1.3 million then has all of these, or is broken down by all of these components, and this all would have added up to 1.3 million. It wouldn't have added up to 1.3 million, by the way. We know from what we heard it probably would have been somewhere around 1.5, okay, if this had been followed. If every bidder had done it that way and had been instructed to do it that way, you would have had an apples-to-apples comparison of who the low bidder is. But they muddied the waters in their instructions, and so what they ended up with was what I believe personally they wanted to end up with, which was this firm, because this is the firm they presented to us in the very beginning, saying this is the one we want to do the construction.
So it was sort of an interpretive response to the bid. Everybody interpreted it in the way that they read it, and so you don't have apples to apples.
I did get feedback from Lyons Construction. They attempted, now apparently they were very high, they attempted to make a phone call to talk to them about this, the bid and the process, and did not get a phone call back.
So that's two reports from two other vendors reporting.
Yeah, I don't know who the other
gentleman
just said.
Right, so this is one she said she had four. I don't know who that fourth person was, or that company was.
Yeah, my point being that I've now heard two other vendors saying that they didn't get calls back on questions regarding the bid process.
Right, but you could probably bet that they worked with them to develop fully the pricing, which really isn't fully developed even now, in my opinion, because he has put an exclusion in his letter at the very end where he says material price fluctuations are common, and our pricing is based on our pricing as of today, and we'll renegotiate anything that changes.
It's like a time and materials contract. I mean, it's more like that.
Yeah, and this is complex construction. It's very complicated to do these types of projects, which is why in the very beginning I recommended that Ferrari Moe be the oversight. Transwestern really struggled with them. They wanted to do it a certain way. Ferrari Moe suggested other things be done. There were struggles there.
One of the things that makes me nervous is the material. This fundamental suggestion about whether or not stucco is twice as much as the other material.
That's right.
And I'm thinking,
this is the first I was hearing.
I've never heard of that. I have no idea. I know what stucco is. I happen to have stucco.
But
this discussion over here about I've never heard it ever raised as an add-on price to use this other material. And these guys all saying it's a ton more.
And in addition to that,
that's a pretty fundamental mistake.
If you go back to the $850,000 bid that we the estimate we originally received, that included an add for the stucco. But now he's saying it's not an add. So, I mean, maybe some more research should be done on that part of it. My general opinion here, having been in this industry for a long time, is that Transwestern should not be managing this project. That would be my recommendation, is that either Ferrari Moe manages it or some other firm, construction management firm, manages it, but that I have not developed confidence in their ability to manage a project like this.
Would that include the tenant communications and all that as well? Or that something set up?
Yeah, I personally believe that the tenant communication should be done with the contracting firm. That putting a person in the middle is going to make it a little more difficult.
I would think it's also fair to say that if we elect to go down a different path, any schedule we've been looking at for this year is probably gone. We're really talking, there's a summer building period, and we're talking about going back out to bid and going back out to another firm. We're putting it off for a year. That may be the right answer, but... we probably ought to at least recognize.
Well, I think you know, this is all important discussion, and then we get to the discussion of, well, now we at least know it's not 1.3 million, okay? We know it's likely to be 1.5 or more. So now our discussion of, well, what do we do with the investment? We have a little better number to say, okay, now we'd be throwing away 1.5 or even more. I personally think you'll probably get somewhere around 1.6 on this at least.
And there's no contingency in the one.
And they have no contingency in their 1.3 million, which typically always have a 10 to 15% contingency.
That's true.
Is there a short-term thing just to get us through the winter, like making anything watertight?
Duct tape?
Well, I think really the short-term project needs to be deciding, are we going to keep it, are we going to sell it? If we're going to keep it, you have to do this work.
Who is the permit holder for the permit that was pulled?
Probably Transwestern.
Transwestern, yeah, probably.
As applicant or as owner, or as owner's representative, rather?
Yeah,
I mean, it's our permit. That's, I get why I'm hoping it's our permit. I guess that's why I'm asking that question.
When you get a permit renewal, is it for a year?
He said initially, was it 180 days?
Yeah, 180.
But that didn't make sense.
So basically half a year then.
He also didn't make it sound like that was great difficulty in getting extensions.
Yeah, but but we probably want to know what the extendability is and what the conditions are and what the time frame is.
I think there's another legal issue here, and that is Transwestern is attempting to act as a construction manager here. And I have not read the document, but I believe if we go back to our agreement between Transwestern and Sisera, that they are really what's called a construction manager not at risk. In other words, I bet there's probably some indemnity language in that agreement that says Transwestern can direct these guys to do whatever they want them to do, and the cost could be $2.8 million when they're done, and they're going to go, okay, well, we're not at risk at it. Okay?
No recourse, as
when
you would say.
Exactly.
Yep.
When you do this kind of construction, you never want to have a not-at-risk situation with somebody else calling the shots and not having to be accountable for it.
The indemnity provision in the current contract with Transwestern would hold them liable for damages that arise out of their willful
negligence.
Gross negligence or willful acts.
Willful.
And there's a reciprocal indemnity for us as well with the same standard.
What's uncomfortable for me is we're just put in the position with the deadline, and all of a sudden, right. This is, you know.
I think the March 8th deadline is going to be blown, but I agree with Deborah that the most important thing is to decide whether or not we're staying here or not. Whether or not it makes financial sense to stay here or not as an investment and as an administrative operation. And then if we're staying here, then we have to repair the building. That's an investment we want to protect.
I still like the deadline part of it.
Well, I agree, but there is certainly you can see some seasonal push.
Oh, I agree with
push.
It's unfortunate for us.
We heard the same thing last year when there was a deadline.
Well, and we've got a year or more of dry rot now.
So. I have a question. I don't know if I want to know the answer today, but I'm not sure what the answer is. But
no lunch.
I was a little. I was just a little concerned. No, I've already had that discussion. I was a little concerned that we pegged a cost at $850, and then we. I don't know which provision of our tenant leases allows us to recoup that cost, but I'm a little. I guess I'm inquisitive about that as to what the basis is for that, as to how first that number was arrived at and two, what the ability is to get that exaction on the leases and what if any issues arise.
My lay understanding is we would have the authority as the lessor to do that, but if we decide not to do the improvements, then I think we got a problem.
Well, that's what I'm
then you're going to have
at.
Some
we've,
credits
we've
on
collected,
future invoices.
I thought I heard $39,000, so I want to be sure I understand what we're doing, what the basis for that was, and what our obligations are with respect to that.
Yeah, so if we don't go forward, we would be crediting back.
The 850 was just the best number that we had.
That was the initial peg number to do it.
So that they initiated recovering that cost as quickly as possible,
right.
To begin as quickly as possible.
Did she say 20 years that they're
20.
Taking
mm-hmm.
that?
Right.
So that's a long amortization, but I'm just wondering if tenants who are, in effect, paying for that have asked what's the status of the project.
that we're paying for? I don't know if there is an answer to that. I know if I were a tenant, I would have that question. But
they wouldn't necessarily come to us. They would go to Transwestern with that question. So Gail probably would know.
Just a suggestion for the board. If we want to separate the investment case, do you want to hear from any of your existing investment managers on their perspective on this building?
I think that would be helpful.
Real asset ones, like the ones that are experienced.
I'm just thinking folks who
do it for a living.
Uh-huh. Yeah, or probably, I mean, not the folks who put up marquee office buildings in Midtown Manhattan, but the folks who buy and sell some suburban properties.
You have a natural in mind?
LaSalle with JLL connection. But I would bring in more than one opinion. We used Invesco in the past. I would think if we asked Invesco and LaSalle.
I would think that's a good idea.
How much time would they need to do that?
About 24 hours.
No.
I would go back and call them.
Tim Price calls.
Yeah.
I would ask them what they need.
Research time.
Yeah, but I mean, look, we're paying them for other things. They've shown a willingness to engage with us beyond their existing contract and existing investments. You know, obviously the worst case is it muddies the waters further. But, you know, we could get a couple more opinions.
Water's pretty muddy right now.
It's pretty
muddy.
The incremental effect of a little more turbidity isn't going to...
We might create quicksand is the problem.
We're clearly not going to be able to make a 3-11 decision.
That's true.
If we go down any of these paths, and should we decide that now?
We could see if we can get LaSalle or Invesco here on 3-11. I mean, that's about...
But at least get a report back, maybe get an informational report.
Yeah. I think to John's point, I don't think any member of this board feels comfortable with rushing any decision by 3-11.
I keep getting to that point, simulating what we're saying.
If I could just make a comment on the time frame, you know, I keep thinking about the Ferrari Moe report that they did in December of 2013. And in that report, which each of you have received in your package, you know, there is dry rot. There are issues. The building is not falling apart. If we don't start replacing windows next month, we're still all going to be here. We're not going to have a lot of tenant issues that I would expect. So, you know, talking about a deadline, should we look at this? Do we pull a permit? If we want to act on it, let's act on it. But I think that this is a expensive project on a $10 million building. And I think that personally, if we need to take the time to have a better process in place, that's what needs to be done. And personally, today was the first time that I heard that they had four bids and they dropped the lowest and the highest. So they were left with two. That's not what was communicated to me. And quite honestly, I have concerns about this project. So do with that as you will.
We're talking about a 15% additional investment in the $10 million investment.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I'm hearing. That's exactly what I'm hearing.
And it sounds rushed. I mean, it feels rushed.
The time constraints are two. One is you have to do it when it's not raining, and it's going to be about a 6-month. Mm-hmm. Time frame in best case scenario.
Well, that's year round these days.
Actually, you can take this into the rainy season, but you have to shrink wrap the parts of the building that are exposed.
Which you would think,
which is an he's put in as an added cost of.
So that's one concern. The other concern is the permit and how far we can extend the permit. Can we extend it into next year? We don't know the answer to that.
What's the problem regarding if the permit expires, we refile?
Well, there's a 30% increase.
Well, that was, code changes have been substantial.
Code changes,
presentation.
Right. Thank you for reminding me.
So the preference would be to extend the existing permit to try to get an extension. I think if there's anything pacing in the discussion ever today, it's that.
True.
Yeah. I think we should nail that down and if need be, make an appropriate application for an extension.
For a year.
Or whatever we need to do just to extend it out, because that to me maintains the status quo and then allows the
the time for a more thoughtful decision.
Deborah, normally the insurance coverage for a project manager or a company or entity acting in the capacity of the Transwestern that was intending to act, would it have an exclusion similar to what is in our existing contract, only gross negligence or intentional acts, or would it be a certain threshold?
I'm not sure whether Transwestern has insurance. They would have to have professional liability insurance to cover them acting as a construction manager. I don't know what their coverage is.
Well, I mean, it's something
we need to look into,
and if they were going to act in that capacity, we would have to require them to have such coverage.
But typically, if you did a construction manager at risk, that construction there's various ways you can structure those deals, but that construction manager would be at risk for anything that goes over a certain point. Would it be tough to get a construction manager to do that? I don't know, but I think you somebody like Ferrari Mo, they do construction management. Other firms, I think I gave you a list of three companies like Ferrari Mo that Maryland had to look at. All of those companies do construction management, and they know this type of work. They have architects and engineers on board, and that's what they do.
And then Ferrari Mo's price was way
it was more for the construction management part of it.
Yeah.
But you're paying Transwestern 1% of the construction cost.
Sure.
So they stand to,
Well, I think one of the things that needs to be done between now and certainly the March meeting would be that Gail has to meet with Transwestern and give them feedback on the laundry list of questions and concerns. I've heard three or four times people say, that's not what I heard before, that's the first time I've heard this, mm-hmm. I never heard this before, and she needs to know, or they need to know, why this board, I think appropriately, has decided time out.
Well, before I became less involved in this project, there were a series of emails that went back and forth, and I think it was just as Gail was coming on, between Transwestern and I. And I wrote emails to them about different things, one of them including the selection of the contractor. And I recommended a 5-point criteria that they interview all contractors, that they qualify their bids. That's something that's standard in the industry. If they get four bids, if all they've got are four bids and each of them has holes in it, it's a standard in the industry for them to sit down with all four of them and qualify what the holes are in the bid so that they can do a comparison of all four. I'm not hearing that they did that here. They took the one that they're used to working with and they qualified that bid and developed it into what they presented. So in terms of the bidding process, there's some risk there in terms of the whole public contracting code. But the emails that I sent to them included them doing the research, providing us with qualifications of these contractors, specific projects they've done that are like this. What the gentleman in front of us said, he gave an example of a project that he did that was exterior renovation in a dorm project, which is could be similar to this, but it wasn't done under BSM. It was done with him as a part of another company with other personnel. That's the other concern is, do they have personnel that know how to do this kind of work?
Well, I'm pleased that he has the experience.
He's got the experience, yeah. It seems, at the management level.
Yeah.
But the other thing, I didn't want to go too far into this, but building services maintenance, it's called building services maintenance is the corporate holder of the contractor's license, not BSM Construction. I guess it appears they're doing business as BSM Construction, but that company was founded and built their whole reputation on janitorial and building services, not in construction. Okay, if you go, I go to their website, take a look, okay? It lists construction services as last on the list, but they talk, all their narrative talks about their work in building services, which is landscaping and janitorial and cleaning and so forth.
Lots on the list.
I was concerned that one gentleman making an effort to come down here and make that statement. I mean, it was coming to say like he felt he wasn't treated fairly. Mm-hmm.
She was also very offensive.
Yeah.
Dismissive.
And to Debbie. Did you invite him?
Who?
AC Enterprise?
No.
Well, how would you like to proceed, Gail, in terms of do you need a motion, or is the consensus clear? What? How would you?
I think we have clear direction.
Okay.
I don't think we need a motion, probably.
I would ask, though, that somebody run down, and if I can help, I'll do that, but to run down the permit issue as to one who the holder
yes.
is and its ability to be extended. I think
yes.
that would be an important thing
yeah.
to know.
We'll that definitely cover that. And then we'll also talk with some investment managers.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
Well.
Great ad.
Yeah,
you know, your investment managers may also have suggested construction managers, or I mean, I don't know that you want to start over with somebody else, but
I think what we want to know from our asset managers is how would they go about, if they were the owner of this building, how would they go about assessing this,
making right. a decision?
Yeah,
because
that's what
as
we're having questions about.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do you assess the cost and the uncertainty of repairs versus the economic value of the building? How do you engage with outside parties? That's, I think, what collectively we need a second opinion on that process.
What would George Sigler do?
Okay.
Or Donald Trump. You're fired.
Okay. Moving on. Item 8, consider authorizing.
Recording excerpted.